Chapter 1, The Problem. The Unstated Assumption. First, let's talk about the elephant in the room. Actually, let's talk about the elephant that's been in the room for so long that we've built the room around it and forgotten it's an elephant. Here is the contradiction at the heart of modern finance. We have built a financial system that makes promises about an unlimited future on a planet with limits. This is not a moral argument. It is mathematical and physical, and it applies regardless of ideology. For two centuries, we obscured this contradiction. We found fossil fuels, ancient sunlight stored over millions of years, and burned them at an accelerating rate. We opened new lands, discovered new resources, expanded the population, and built an economy in which tomorrow was almost always larger than today. But that era is changing. The assumption beneath the system, one we treat almost like gravity, is that tomorrow's economy will be larger than today's. Bonds, mortgages, pensions, and other long-term financial claims are built around that expectation. It is not a law of nature. For most of human history, the idea that tomorrow would be materially larger than today would have seemed absurd. The Industrial Revolution changed that, powered in large part by abundant fossil energy. We built our financial architecture around the exceptional conditions that followed and gradually came to treat them as normal. Now those conditions are changing. The four walls. The great expansion rested on several pillars. I call the limits now closing around the 21st century economy the four walls. 1. The demographic wall. For most of history, population growth expanded the labor force and helped drive economic activity. That engine is now reversing. Birth rates are falling across much of the developed world and increasingly across the developing world. By mid-century, many countries are expected to have far more retirees relative to workers. The demographic tailwind is becoming a headwind. Japan, with decades of weak growth and debt exceeding 200% of GDP, is an early example of what happens when demographic momentum reverses. 2. The productivity wall. From the Industrial Revolution through much of the 20th century, productivity growth was exceptionally strong. In recent decades, however, many advanced economies have experienced slower gains. Despite the internet, smartphones, and extraordinary technological advances, the productivity engine has not consistently matched the rates that characterized earlier periods. The engine that powered expansion has lost some of its momentum. 3. The resource wall. The issue is not that the world is literally running out of fossil fuels. It is that the era of cheap, easily accessible resources is under increasing pressure. The remaining deposits can require more energy, capital and environmental cost to extract. The same broader constraint applies to fresh water, fertile land and other essential inputs. 4. The ecological wall. Climate change is the most visible symptom, but it is not the only one. Biodiversity loss, ocean acidification, and disrupted nitrogen and phosphorus cycles are connected expressions of an economy that has treated the planet as both an abundant resource and an unlimited sink for waste. The Planetary Boundaries Framework identifies 9 critical Earth system processes, several of which are now considered to have crossed their safe boundaries. These walls are not distant possibilities. They are converging. Yet walls also define a space. Within that space, something new can be built. The growth trap. For two centuries, growth was treated as the answer to almost everything. Debt grew too quickly. Grow the economy. Pensions were underfunded. Grow the economy. Inequality increased. Grow the economy. Environmental damage mounted. Grow the economy. Growth became the universal solvent. That logic is now becoming a trap. First, growth is not sufficient. Even sustained economic expansion does not eliminate the mathematics of compounding financial claims over long periods. Second, growth is constrained. Demographic change, slower productivity gains, resource pressures, and ecological limits make the conditions for perpetual expansion increasingly difficult. Third, growth alone is not the objective. Economic activity can rise while inequality, instability, or environmental damage also rise. What matters is not simply producing more, but producing greater value and well-being with sustainable use of resources. GDP illustrates the problem. It measures economic activity, not whether that activity improves lives. Rebuilding after a disaster adds to GDP. So does military expenditure. Both represent spending, but neither automatically represents greater well-being. The central problem is therefore not growth itself. It is the assumption that more must always be the answer. The physical constraints are closing in. But there is a wild card, artificial intelligence. AI could dramatically increase what we produce from the resources we already have. Or it could concentrate wealth, displace workers, and weaken the link between employment and income. Understanding that paradox is essential. The AI paradox. Artificial intelligence may be the most consequential productivity technology of our time. Like electricity or the steam engine, it is a general-purpose technology capable of transforming almost every sector. But it has a crucial difference. Previous technologies primarily amplified human labor. AI can automate significant amounts of cognitive work itself. It can process information at extraordinary speed, automate analysis and decision-making, and potentially produce large productivity gains. Some estimates suggest AI could add 15-20% to global GDP over the next decade, although such forecasts are highly uncertain. The opportunity is enormous. So is the risk. AI differs from earlier technological revolutions in several important ways. It automates cognitive as well as physical tasks. It is general purpose, affecting almost every sector. Its capabilities can improve rapidly. Its deployment is heavily dependent on capital and computing infrastructure. Its development is concentrated among a relatively small number of companies. If AI dramatically raises productivity while reducing employment, the traditional circulation of income could weaken. Who has the purchasing power to buy what increasingly automated systems produce? If ownership of the gains remains concentrated, inequality could widen sharply. If productivity creates abundance while prices and incomes fall, existing nominal debts could become harder to service. AI could therefore strengthen the economy, or expose the weaknesses of a financial system built around continuously rising output and incomes. The outcome depends partly on how its gains are distributed. That is where the productivity bond and productivity dividend enter the story. What if debt didn't compound? Imagine a financial system in which debt claims did not automatically grow simply because time passed. A $100 obligation at 5% currently becomes larger regardless of whether the underlying economy improves. When incomes rise, the burden becomes easier to carry. When the economy stagnates, it becomes heavier. When it contracts, the same fixed obligation can become crushing. The claim does not share the economy's risk. What if it did? Equity already provides one example. Shareholders participate in the performance of a company. They gain when it succeeds and lose when it fails. Inflation-linked and GDP-linked bonds move partway toward the same principle by tying payments to measurable economic conditions. The productivity bond extends that logic to efficiency. Its return is linked to improvements in productivity rather than an automatically accumulating fixed rate. The claim participates in economic progress instead of assuming it in advance. The distinction is important. The goal is not to eliminate returns to investors. It is to change what those returns depend on. Instead of time to interest to larger debt, the logic becomes productive improvement to shared gain to sustainable return. Think of compound debt as a snowball rolling downhill. It grows simply because it is moving. The alternative is a snowball attached to a rope. It moves when the economy creates genuine gains. The rope is productivity. This changes the relationship between borrower and lender. Risk and reward become more closely aligned. Financial obligations become more responsive to economic conditions. The incentive to pursue expansion for its own sake is reduced. The idea is simple, but its implications are significant. If financial claims can participate in genuine economic improvement without requiring perpetual expansion, we may be able to preserve the benefits of finance while removing one of its most powerful pressures. That is the thought experiment. The next chapter turns it into a financial instrument.